welcome once again to another episode of Demand Gen Radio, the one program that brings you all the latest methods and technologies for driving growth and increasing demand. With the voice of Demand Gen, David Lewis.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Demand Gen Radio. Today's a special day for me because I am joined by a fellow CEO and longtime colleague, Andre Yi. For those of you that don't know Andre, our relationship goes back to early 2008. Andre was a senior vice president at Eloqua long before they were acquired by Oracle. And he and I formed a very close relationship because we were doing a lot of work and still are to these days helping Eloqua clients be successful. So Andre and I got to know each other in terms of talking about the product roadmap and making sure that our client feedback got all the way to Andre, and Andre would come to me and my team and say, what do you think of this new capability? And that was a very exciting time because it was a major release of the new interface from Eloqua 9 to Eloqua 10, and it was a big time in Eloqua's history, and the company and culture and passion for customer success was phenomenal. So it's a very special day for me to bring back the intimate kind of conversations that Andre and I would have. And I think, Andre, what would be great is if we just talk a little bit about the mind of the CEO, and they also talk about maybe the correlations that the experiences we have leading our organizations tie to marketing leadership. So, hey, thank you for joining me, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be on your podcast. I know recently you had your 100th episode, and you had Joe Payne on, and I'm glad to follow on his coattails and be on your podcast.
Yeah, two of the executives, former executives at Eloqua, have been now on Demand Gen Radio as of late. I probably need to reach out to Alex Schutman over CEO of Workfront these days, who's Workfront's a client of ours. Work close with Heidi and Jason and the team over there. We should get Alex, and then we'll have the full three musketeers on the program. How are you?
That's great. I'm doing well. You know, since Eloqua and actually post the acquisition by Oracle, as you know, Dave, because we've had many conversations, I decided to do the one thing I had never done in my career, which is do a startup. And long story short, it led me to starting Triblio. And we are in the account-based marketing space and have been in market with product for 3.5 years. So it's been interesting and exciting ride so far.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. We're going to dig deeper into that. There's so much MarTech out there. I really thought it'd be cool to have a CEO from one of the MarTech companies on and just talk about what it's like to build a company from scratch and the things that he goes through. I think a lot of you who are CMOs and marketing leaders and sales leaders, you'll see some similarities in what it takes to build and grow a company, right? Same as building and growing a team, we will find. So where are you guys these days? I know you're located physically in Western Virginia, but in terms of number of clients and maybe some other factoids to hear how things are going, some metrics to your startup.
Sure. We're in Northern Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. That's where we're physically located. But in the 3.5 years that we've been in market, we now have about 125 customers and counting. And they kind of range from really fast-growing venture-backed SMBs to global enterprises like Amex and G-Power and Software AG. I think the thing that we sort of pride ourselves on, and it's really built off the culture and the learnings from Eloqua, is we have the best retention rate in our space. And it's because, on average over the last 2 years, it's over 90%. And it's just a fanatical, commitment to the customer that we've carried over from Eloqua. So, that's something that we believe in, and we've continued built into the way we do business. The fundamental difference, I would say, of what we do is just, we're building a ABM platform. We have, from the moment we've been in market, is we've had this vision of, ABM's going to be something, and so we're going to build a complete platform to serve that emerging discipline in B2B marketing. So,
and you guys started with personalization. In fact, I remember we had a conversation one time at a trade show. You came up to me and you were picking my brain and saying, what are some of the keys to success in starting a company? What from that conversation did it leave its mark?
Yeah, first of all, just, you know, for your audience, most of my career has been built around scaling businesses. You know, so I'll join a company that's like 10 to 20 million in revenue, and then we try to scale it hopefully to hundreds of millions of dollars like we did with Eloqua. So most of my career and my expertise is around scaling businesses. But, you know, as I was doing Triblio, I realized very early on, starting a business, getting from zero to 10 is very different from taking it from 10 to 100. You know, both have its particular challenges, but zero to 10 is difficult, and it's a different set of skills, different muscles that you have to exercise. And so I was looking for different folks that, you know, were entrepreneurs, and you were a very key voice in the early days. I think we were at a conference, and I was just asking you about, you know, what it's like to start, and, you know, and I think, first of all, you were very encouraging, you know, in terms of, you know, me embarking on that journey. And then I think something you said was just that struck me was just, you know, getting the culture right and making sure you always do the right thing by the customer, which I think has been evident in the way you've built your business. So, you know, it's something that I took away, and it's, you know, it's really been a guiding principle for us.
Well, I'm glad you launched. I don't recall all the elements of the conversation, but I'm glad that the culture point stuck. And you know, when you launch a company, or even if you're building a department for the very first time, I do believe that culture is absolutely key to success, and you've got to build a team that has some common characteristics or common DNA. We established our core values at Demand Gen. I don't know if you've done that yet. And the way that we did that, Andre, was we literally took the names of some of the teammates at that time that were just phenomenal, and shout outs to people like Drew Noel and Rob Mayo and Tom Sveck, who is our director of MarTech today, and folks like Gaia on the team, and all these different people on our team that we felt were great with our clients and just great members of the team. And we said, well, what do they have in common? Almost like if you were to describe, you know, food characteristics, and you put like, you know, barbecue chicken on the wall, and you said, what is it? Oh, it's a little sweet, it's a little savory. And so we describe these folks, and we said, he gets shit done. She's so dependable. He's so caring, and she's so this, and he's so that. And so all these words went up on the wall, Andre. Mm-hmm. And then we aggregated the words that were synonyms for each other. And then that ended up with our five core values, which are driven, invested, dependable, caring, and collaborative. And those are, that's the makeup of our team. And when we interview people, we literally score them of whether we think they have those characteristics based on interviewing. And since we've done that, the stability in our organization and the camaraderie and the teamwork has just been so impactful. So I'm glad you took away, you know, core values doesn't create culture. Culture comes from the top. But if you hire people that have the right makeup of what you're looking for as a company, you know, if you hired a bunch of analytical mathematicians, scientists, right, but you want to create a customer service experience department, you may not be hiring the right people just in terms of their personas, let alone the skill set, right? So I'm glad you took that away. But I owe you an apology, and you probably feel it now more than ever. You ready for this? I was encouraging because I wanted you to be an entrepreneur. I wanted you to start your own thing because it's been the most rewarding journey of my life. But I didn't tell you all the other stuff that comes with it, did I? And the challenges. So
yeah,
sorry for that.
It's been great, Dave. It's been great. You know, although there are times I do, like every entrepreneur, you wake up and you kick yourself and you say, what the heck am I doing? You know. You know, if I can just touch a little bit back on the culture point, you know, it's really interesting how you went about creating your core values. I think one of the things about establishing a culture that I think, and it's so core to, you know, building anything, right? That building any kind of institution, whether it's a department or a company, is it will test you at your deep core, right? Because it's not about what you say you do; it's about who you are,
right?
Right. And so, you know, it's not a PowerPoint slide. It's about really digging deep and saying, who are you, and maybe who do you want to be on your best day, right? So for us, you know, one of the things we've carried over, and it's not as maybe it's not as elaborate as your core values in terms of being descriptive, but there are four things that sort of guide our values. Two of them, former Eloquence will recognize. One is, you know, we used to have this, get it done and do it right. So part of it is we have a culture that is about getting it done mostly for the customer, right? So, and so that's part of our core value. The other is doing it right, meaning, you know, we're not going to spell out every ethical scenario, but you know when you're doing something right and when you're not doing something right. Like, you know, use your best judgment, obviously, you know, but, you know, we're not going to spell out every single, you know, positive attribute, but, you know, do the right thing, so to speak, and do it in the right way. There are two others that we've added. One is ownership mentality. You know, don't you see something that needs to be done, take ownership for that. You know, don't say it's not my job or whatever. You know, that the sense of really owning the problem, owning the customer concern, whatever it is. And then the last piece is positive candor, right? We want to be positive, but we also want to speak honestly to each other.
Yeah.
And so that's a really important thing, you know, because it helps. Sometimes it causes a lot of friction and sparks fly, but it's, as you know, Dave, it's kind of, as you're building a business, you have to have those honest conversations.
For sure.
Between the partners, between partners and between the executives and the employees, and between the employees and the customers. I mean, it you know, so those are some of our core values and principles.
I'm glad you bring up candor. I want to come back to that too. And what I want to say about candor is, for all my listeners, I have reached out to Kim Scott, who is, I believe they're on the New York Times bestseller list for the book that she wrote, Radical Candor. It's orange cover. Probably see it in airports. So Kim and I have been conversing, and she's working on another book right now. So I'm either going to have her, or I think maybe Amy on her team, on the podcast. And I feel pretty confident that that's going to happen. We're just down to scheduling. So I don't want to disappoint you, Andre, or anyone else, because it's going to be a great. And the reason that I want to have her on, as you said, like, if you can bring candor into your organization, and I like how you said positive candor. I mean, she has a whole book written on it. And that is, well, I'm going to save it for that episode. But wow, I read that book, and it has been super helpful for me to have just even more direct, candid conversations with my team and even with customers than I was comfortable doing before. And, you know, even someone who's, you know, 53 years old, been a CEO now for 12 years, I'm always sharpening my saw. I'm always building my skills, right? We're never done. We're athletes as well in the workplace, and we're constantly honing our skills.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So that book helped me. How has being candid helped you, especially in a startup?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, that, you know, that's a great book. The Radical Candor book has been a great book, but we chose to use the phrase positive candor, and it's actually my chief customer officer, Andrew Marr, that came up with that phrase. And because, you know, I have actually very little problems being candid with people, but sometimes I can be a little bit, a little maybe not as sensitive as I ought to be. And I think it's from us that phrasing of the positivity side and the candor together is really helpful. It's a helpful reminder for me to, while I want to be candid, I need to figure out how to do it in a positive way that's encouraging as well, right? But it's really important because, you know, for instance, you know, from time to time you have challenges, sometimes there are challenges in our product, and, you know, my co-founder and I are very close. You know, he's our CTO, Mike Ball, and he was my lead architect at Eloqua, and super smart guy. But there are times I have to sit down with him and I have to say, look, I think you're not paying attention to the customer success team's concern about the number of bugs, because he's a very aggressive guy in terms of his communication style. And sometimes he can just shut conversations down just by being so assertive. And I said, listen, I have to have a very, honest and candid conversation with him. And we're not, but I think, you know, you hear a lot of horror stories about people starting companies and not, you know, the founding team doesn't get along and the company implodes or execution is suboptimal. Thankfully, he's, you know, every time I've had to do that, he's been very humble and been able to respond and say, yeah, you know, I need to pay attention. But it's the ability for all of us, not just me to him, but all of them as a team coming in and at times confronting me because I'm, you know, as I mentioned, sometimes maybe a little too harsh in my judgment on a matter, you know, and I have to swallow that and say, you know, first of all, understand that it's being done from a positive perspective. Like they want to help me so that I'm better at what I do. Right. But it's definitely, you know, helped us keep the team together, keep us working together, not just surviving the experience, but enjoying the experience and then actually getting better, you know, over the course of time.
Yeah. It's literally 10:27 my time right now. So, you know, people listen to this at different time. You're in a different time zone. But the reason I mention that is as early as 6:30 this morning, I was getting text on my phone from another CEO, ironically or not so much, at another MarTech company. And he was just asking me if I was awake. And I said, I am now. No, I was. For some reason, got up early, as I often do, between 5:30 and 6, and used that quiet time to map out the day and map out my thoughts. And so he just needed someone to talk to. And so we got on the phone, and he's, you know, struggling with a few things. He needs to find a CEO for his organization. He's talking to a marketing company who wants to, you know, because he knows that he needs to prop up his marketing. So he's looking at an outside agency, you know, to come in and help there. And he's also looking at a consultant. And he sent me the consultant's job description. And my email back to him was, I don't know if I should write back, this is the most horrible SOW I've ever seen, or give me a call, and a whole bunch of other things in the list. And so we got on the phone, and the conversation was really great because it was so candid, and it was just talking about the struggles. And my advice to him was, you know, I wouldn't bring in this marketing agency right now, and I would think differently about the consultant. And the reason was, is what he really needs to do is get some leadership in his organization that will take those initiatives forward. Because otherwise you just create so much thrashing in your organization, right? You're the CEO and you wake up every morning, Andre, seeing that you need to do X here or more here or less here.
Yeah.
And if you as a CEO go and just kick up dust, right, and bring in an outside person to tell the team, you know, it's almost like he wants some outside validation to tell the team, hey, these are all the things that we should be doing in marketing. And if you do that and you don't have the team to actually implement it, or they're already totally maxed out, you're just creating thrashing as a CEO, and you're really not helping the organization in that way.
Yeah, you can't outsource the most critical strategic things, you know, that you have to do in the business, right? The most important things. You can't outsource that, you know, because when you outsource it, it's tantamount to, like, you know, abdication of responsibility. Those are things you have to own. It's possible at the right time you can bring in a consultant to help you think through that and to, you know, but you got to own that, right? And we've all seen it in our business.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time when, you know, to be frank, our a couple of years back, our SDRs were not functioning well as a, you know, they just had trouble, right? They were having trouble with primarily execution, operationalizing, scaling, and you know, there's that line between I don't want to micromanage, but I also need to own that problem and work with the executive in charge to fix that, right? And not just say, hey, you know, let me bring in a consultant and we'll all be good. I mean, it may involve bringing a consultant, but the sense of you know, if we're going to be a team as executives, I've got to jump in there with you and co-own this with you and not isolate you just because you have a problem.
Yeah.
Right. And so,
I think it's important for people, you know, listening that, you know, whether you're on a team or you lead a team, you know, things like what Andre and I are talking about establishing those core values and culture for your team and really looking at what your team is doing and what they're not doing and how you can bring them to the next level. Andre, I'm going to ask you a question, which is, you know, you have ideas, right? You're the CEO. Part of your responsibility, well, there's different types of CEOs. There's the integrator type CEO, which is a really good facilitator, but more common of the CEO is the ideas person, the visionary, you know, where the company should be going. And then your COO is normally the integrator, which is the person who's going to help you get there and get all that stuff done. When you have ideas, how do you communicate to your organization, and how does your organization know that's not just one of Andre's ideas? He actually wants us to do something about it, right? Because you're sometimes in brainstorm mode where you're like, hey, I think we should expand our product from being in personalization to do account-based advertising. Well, was that him telling us to go write a new product plan to enhance those capabilities, or is he looking to be a sounding board? So how do you approach those conversations and get the team to know when you're thinking versus you're directing?
Well, first of all, the short answer is probably not well, I would say.
Thank you for being candid.
I do things very instinctively sometimes, and maybe I should be a little more structured. I think here's how it generally goes. And I can use that example because I think early on, as you mentioned, we were only doing web personalization. I started realizing that, you know, as I think through, you know, how the market's going to evolve, I said, you know, at the end of the day, we, as a company, what we realized was this: if account-based marketing ended up being a category, then just doing web personalization would not capture the whole value, or I started realizing wouldn't capture even the majority value of that opportunity. So the question is, what will? And I came to a conclusion, or at least a thesis, that we have to be a platform. And depending on what, we can define what that is, but we have to think in those terms. So when I started thinking that way, I think one of the first things I do is I socialize it with my executive team and a few others who are core to the business. They have a lot of good context, and it doesn't mean that they're necessarily hierarchically placed in the organization at a hot, elevated level. It mm-hmm. could be a software developer. It could be someone in customer success that really has a good pulse on it. But there's certainly an inner core of folks that we'll talk about and we'll validate. You know, we'll first of all just develop that idea internally, kick it around. And then one of the things we do is, and I actually learned this from my time at Eloqua, is, you know, at Eloqua, we had a lot of ideas, and it was always, I think Joe had a discipline about, let's test the idea. Is it worthy to be tested, right? And if it is worthy, let's go test it. What does testing the idea look like? And I think we all read this at Eloqua, just like you were saying earlier, you know, you're a voracious reader. You're always in learn mode. I think that's also the thing at Eloqua. So I remember reading this book where, I think by Jim Collins, where he says, you know, fire bullets, then cannonballs. Mm-hmm. And the idea is basically test it in the small.
Yeah.
And then if that validates, then go and, you know, then you think about a large scale. And so we do those kinds of things. And in that case, you know, we tested it in the small by essentially doing very deep interviews with existing clients and saying, you know, why did you buy this other product for account-based ads, and what are your other use cases? And if we had it, would you have bought it from us, and that kind of thing? Or, so it's about socializing the idea with people you trust. I think your executive team has to be part of that, as well as an extended set of folks, and then finding a way to test it, validate it, and then put a plan together to press in and roll out at a broader scale.
Yeah, it's where I see a lot of similarities between a CEO and a CMO is taking on new initiatives. And just like you said, fire bullets and then cannonballs. So in terms of like a new initiative example for us, we decided towards the end of last year, towards the end of 2018, so many MarTech companies have been coming to us and saying, we don't want to build a professional services team. Our clients really need the expertise that you guys have to implement our technology well and make them successful. And they wanted to form a partnership. And so we put forward this radical idea. Anita Covelli, who is our VP of Alliances, you know Anita, she was at Oracle, and she's been in the community a long time. So she and I, you crafted the idea of, why don't we start doing implementation for a select set of partners? And so, you know, 4 months later, we are now doing implementations for RingLead's clients, we're doing implementations for Lean Data's clients, and we're doing implementations for Uberflip's clients. So two data-related tools and then one content tool. And when I came to the organization and say, hey, we're expanding two pillars of services, we're going to expand our MarTech services and start doing implementations, and then we're also going to launch these new data services. As a CEO, I have to tell them, like, we're now going down another road together. And I'm really, you know, the balance of, you know, if you're a CMO, right, and you're going to launch a brand new campaign, you want to come to the organization, or let's say you're buying a new piece of MarTech, whatever new or big change that you're bringing, you as a leader have to communicate your conviction and passion for the idea. But you also need to tell them, if it doesn't work, we're going to fail fast. And we're going to pilot, and then we're going to perfect, right? We're not going to try to do everything and get, you know, it's where the term like minimal viable product, right? We're not going to try to do everything we need to do right to get to market, because that's not the way things work anymore. So we have to be agile and we have to get to market. And it's a very difficult challenge, I feel, whether you're any CX whatever, or even just a leader in an organization, to take on a new initiative, make sure the team is bought in and know what success looks like. And then if you're not getting there, to either make that decision, here's what we do need to do next to get more successful or get successful, or it's time to fail and move on and say it did or didn't work. Have you experienced that in terms of your product roadmap or other parts of the business?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I you know, certainly in a product roadmap, I should confess that if you dig in the sort of like in the history of Triblio, what you're going to find is that the first iteration, I actually started the company in 2014. So earlier I said we've been in market for 3.5 years with ABM. But before that, we actually had an idea that was, I would say, similar in some ways to like an Uberflip. It was the idea of curating content and then being able to post it to essentially a content board. We didn't feel like that was what was right for us. And, I know Uberflip's done good things since then, but we didn't feel it was right thing for us because we really didn't want to find what we thought was the next great MarTech platform. And to us, it was clear that that wasn't going to be it. I mean, you can have a really good add-on business there, but it wasn't going to be a platform in that sense. At least that's what we believe. And so it was hard. You know, here's the tricky thing, to be in full honesty, and I've never said this in public, so this will be a first. I raised our initial financing seed round about $3.5 million in the summer of 2014 off the basic pitch and a prototype. It wasn't really a fully fledged product. It was a prototype. Here's the thing. 90 days after I raised, I realized we were on the wrong path.
Yeah,
it's when I realized I don't want to be in the Uberflip curation thing. Now, just think about that. I just went on a, you know, 6 months trying to raise money, finally got two investors to put in $1.5 million each plus some angels. And then the first board meeting, I knew we're not on the right track. And so believe me, there's all kinds of temptation to just say, this isn't the right track for us, but let's just keep rolling, you know, because you don't want to, it's hard to say you got it wrong, and even worse to say you sold everyone on the wrong idea. But we did. We eventually just told them, look, it was a second board meeting. We said, listen, this is not where we think the really big opportunity is. Here's where we're headed, you know, and then bringing the whole company along with it. Now, in fairness, back then we were much smaller, and so it wasn't hard. Today, if we did that, I'm sure it'd be a lot more difficult, right? Being able being able to acknowledge failure fast to say, no, this is not, you know, we picked the wrong thing, and then we got to pivot. That was not pleasant, but it was necessary.
And you may, in many ways, get as much credibility and respect by admitting that you need to pivot and why you need to pivot and make change, as opposed to being blind, having blinders on and not being able to admit that you need to change direction, right? Because they ultimately invested in the team, right? They invested in Andre Yi and they invested in your vision, and you had a track record of success. So they're investing first there. And yes, they bought into what you explained, but they're probably thankful that you didn't stay on that path and go down that. But you've taken paths to compete with some other, you're getting into personalization, you're competing with Optimizely and lots of other tools out there, getting into account-based advertising, you're competing with Terminus and Demandbase, with account scoring, you know, it's Lean Data and Engageo and Marketo, right? So you have no fear, it seems, as you continue to expand. Well, you have lots of fear, let's be honest. We're all human and we definitely have fears. We just have to get over our fears to take the risk that we need to take in life, especially being an entrepreneur and CEO. All of us are fearful. All of us get afraid of failure. It is our ability to push past those emotions and believe in ourselves and then feel success and have success. You know, it's the kid who wants to learn how to play basketball, right? And throws the ball at the hoop five times. If he stopped right there and never made a basket, he wouldn't be Steph Curry. And it's a Steph Curry who's willing to throw the ball at the basket, you know, 2,000 times a day or whatever he does to become the master. But he knew he wanted to play basketball, and he's stayed in that. How has it been leading the team as you've gone through these evolutions of the platform and product? Have you run into resistance of them not getting on board or challenging in some of the decisions that you're making?
Well, you know, truthfully, no, we haven't experienced a lot of, if you would, dissension in sort of leading the team through change. Because in part, I think it goes back to what we started with, which is when you're hiring a team, when you're building a team, having a team, you know, that buys into a particular culture. And so one of the things is we, you know, we have a culture of goodwill, right? And it's not that they, you know, it's not that they don't ask us difficult questions, the employee base, they do. And it's partly because we have this attribute or this value of positive candor, where they feel like, you know, hey, they can ask anything, they can say anything, and we'll openly discuss it. I think that takes away that, you know, transparency creates trust, right? And so if we're transparent about why we want to do things, when we made the wrong turn, it helps create trust that allows you to lead forward. I think that's part of it. That's been a real help. I do want to go back to something you were saying, how, you know, I now find myself in a space where there's a lot of competition and, you know, there's a lot of, I think one of the differences that I've learned from scaling businesses versus doing the 0 to 10 million startup journey is that in that journey of the startup journey, I think you have to pay less attention to competition and more attention to finding the demand. And I think, you know, the reason we pivoted was we had a conviction and we saw evidence of demand. And I think, that's really one of the fundamental differences, I think, between, you know, someone that comes in when the company's rolling, they found product market fit, and their job is to scale the business, versus someone like you and I when we started to sort of find the demand. Where, you know, what's the demand in market? How can we serve the needs of the market? And I think in those early stages, what you're looking for is not, you know, a lot of people say, find the pain point. Well, I can tell you that in today's world where information flows so quickly, if there is a known evident pain point, you've probably missed it. It's already, someone's already fulfilling that, so to speak. So I think in this, in any emerging category, it's about finding the future or the emerging pain point, right? Being able to see and say, ah, this is going to be a problem, or I see this becoming a problem, right? So,
yeah. You've been serving the needs of marketers now for a very long time. And one of the things that I'm observing, you know, this, the environment that we're in today, is that marketers are completely feeling overwhelmed. I mean, I don't have market research. Like, I didn't ask 1,000 clients, but I've been to a lot of conferences in the beginning of this year. We have another conference next week. The Serious Decisions Conference is coming up. And when I get to these face-to-face environments, what clients share with me, and this is the sentiment I'm hearing, completely feeling overwhelmed in their environments these days. Like the enormity of the role has gotten so big between the challenges of, and these are, you know, for the most part, leaders in marketing organizations, but even people that are, you know, doing the work, it's like, I've got to be responsible for awareness and the brand and the, and in many cases, you know, the product marketing aspects, all the different marketing technology and digital experience and the customer experience. And now because we can track everything, the expectation around analytics and performance is there. And then I've got data to deal with. And you know, our data is like an episode of Hoarders and that's got to get cleaned up. And, you know, I'm lacking someone on my team to do it. And they just go through the stack of stuff and I look at their face and I hear these conversations. And, you know, our job is to help them be heroes, right? At the end of the day, that's our mission. And it's to help them alleviate all those things on their plate. But when I listen to what's on their stack, I do see so many common emotions and feelings and thoughts to a leader, a CEO, to someone who's like, you know, I need the product and the market and the revenue and the customer service. And, you know, when you look at the role of the CEO across an organization, And I just see so many, I see that the field of marketing has just forever changed and the emotional tidal wave of the enormity of the role has really hit clients. And it's one of the reasons that we try to bring at these events our clients together. I think we could do more client networking so that they can talk with one another and hear lessons from each other. Are you, as someone who's developing products for these markets, are you sensing some of the similar feelings and sentiments, as well as I got to think that, you know, you're maybe feeling more resistance these days than you did in the past because there are so many shiny new toys out there. How do you cut through the clutter to get their attention and go, you know what, actually our platform is going to help you and do this, right? Because every new tool feels a little bit of excitement, but now met with the responsibility, which was, I think, overlooked earlier on because there, it was a little bit more of a shopping spree that was going on the quest to find the tool set.
Yeah. I mean, it's not difficult to be empathetic with the challenges that marketing leaders face, whether you're a director of marketing, whether you're CMO or even an individual contributor, It's just become a lot more complex. You know, the tools are certainly make it more challenging. There's so many tools, right? And you know, then you have to figure out how to integrate those tools. So there's a whole part that has to do with technology, but then there's another part that has to do with what is expected. You know, what we expect from the marketing department and the CMO 10 to 15 years ago, very different from what's expected today, right? I mean, 15 years ago, mostly CMOs were focused on brand. You know, they didn't have, you know, demand gen as a focus, right? And a lot of times it was, they outsourced that to an agency. I mean, it was just a lot less complex. Today, a lot more in-house work is done. You have to, you know, you have a myriad of roles within your organization. You know, you have to be part technologist, part, a sales guy combined with him. I mean, there's just a lot more. So from that standpoint, it's not hard to be sort of empathetic to how complex it is. I think to your point about, you know, there, what makes ABM not just another shiny new toy, I'll just say this. First of all, I think ABM does a couple of things that are really, really important. One is that it aligns sales and marketing together because, as you well know, people sell, the B2B salesperson thinks in terms of accounts. It aligns the way we do marketing with the way sales team sells. And there's a lot that goes into that. The second thing is it focuses not just on individual leads. It focuses on reaching the entire buying group, which is really, really important. And there are a lot of other benefits. But on our part, we've really always believed that account-based marketing is a transient state. And you know, as a vendor, you might be shocked to hear me say this as a vendor, but we've always believed account-based marketing is just a transient state. In 3 to 5 years, people are not going to be talking about account-based marketing as a discrete category, in my opinion. It's just going to be part of what modern B2B marketing should be. Right. And there's going to be a change upon us And hopefully that change will create more clarity. But I believe, as a vendor, as a technologist, I believe the future of a MarTech platform, and I spend a lot of time thinking about this, the future of MarTech platform and really the future of B2B marketing in general is creative. It's really creative. It's not about data. I know that sounds strange, but what I mean by that is whatever the next gen platform is, one of the things it must do is make it a lot easier to execute and obtain insights so that marketers can get back to the things that they love to do and can lend the most value in, which is designing creative programs, designing creative campaigns. So I think today, the way the platforms are, too much time is spent on operational execution.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think the future of marketing really is about creating a MarTech platform that allows the B2B marketer to get back to being creative, right? And it's, nobody ever said, I want to be a B2B marketer so that I can work on an integration between Eloqua and Salesforce, or Trivio and Salesforce, right? They did it because there's something very exciting about being creative in the way you build a campaign. I think the future of marketing.
To your point, Andre, let's take this podcast, for example, the one that you and I are doing in the podcast as a whole. Mm-hmm. So for me to get, I'm going to digress for a moment. For me to get the podcast going, and I'm going to tie a lot of the themes that we've talked about already. First of all, needed the idea, needed to say, okay, we're going to go into a whole new channel of marketing. We're going to do more than, if omnichannel is what we should be doing, what's the next channel? Right? We really haven't even conquered YouTube yet. I want to focus on YouTube at some point and create what I've done for Demand Gen Radio. I want to do for video and teach people and show people the methods and technologies. That's on my roadmap. I don't know when I'm going to get there, but it's on my roadmap. To do the podcast, I had to figure out what equipment to buy. Technical, right? Mm-hmm. How to stitch it all together. Technical. What podcast platform to get and how to publish and host them. Justin, I know you're listening because you're editing this podcast right now. Thank you for all you do. Justin had to learn GarageBand. He had to learn Audacity. He had to set up the box file structures so that when we create the files, we upload it. He had to come up with all the social media aspects, had to create all the emails to the guests. So you'll get an email from him that says, here's all the thumbnails for your Twitters and, writing all the code in case you want to put it online. He had to learn just recently in iTunes to get the descriptions to show up right. You have to code the descriptions in a very particular way in the software we use. So I could go on. I mean, there's about 15 more. We don't have enough time of just things that we needed to technically learn and technically figure out to get the podcast just even launched and, to use Alex's word, to get it done and then do it right. How much energy went into all that? Well, really what I wanted to do is just have great conversations with smart and talented people who have good advice for people who wanted to tune in. And then, oh, by the way, tying in the failing fast, do you know that in the first year, the first month number of listeners, 37, then it was about 70, and then it was about 80, all right? So I'm putting multiple episodes together after figuring all this out, and there's 80 people that have listened to the podcast in an entire month. And, now over 4,000. And
awesome.
Thank you. But for a year, I just looked like, I'm a failure. I'm a failure. I'm a failure. And I'm a failure. Oh, thank you, Mom, for listening to the podcast 10 times. Or, I'm like, who the hell is listening to the thing? But I believed that one day the audience would catch up to the channel, right? I didn't know if marketers and sales folks and the people that we've attracted to the program would find Demand Gen Radio and then want to keep tuning in. And to your point, all I really want to do is just focus on the content now. I don't want the heavyweight, and I'm thankful I have Justin on our marketing team to take all the technical aspects off the plate now and the journey that we went on together so I can focus on content. So your vision is that if we could just create content and put it in our CMS and put it in our marketing automation system and put it in all the various content systems we have, and it would just seamlessly work, and everything would just be a little bit more automagic, what a great day that will be. We're far off from that, but I look forward to the day where we can get back to just great content marketing and you know, get back to the four P's of marketing, which we've added so many ever since then. I'm glad you had that vision. Let's keep working on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, a big part of what makes it difficult, and you know, thanks for telling that story about the podcast. And just think about it. That's just not to say it's just a podcast, but it is just a podcast relative to think about what a CMO in a typical B2B organization has to do or execute to, and that means a lot of what you were describing is about integrating the process. And so part of what makes it so difficult today is in B2B marketing tools is the level of integration, the work that has to be done to integrate tools together. And so I think the future has to be just, you know, a lot easier, you know, a lot more out of the box and functioning. And we're a long way acknowledged. But I think for that to arrive at that point, that you have to have an integrated system. You have to have, to steal a phrase from Mark Benioff, a system of intelligence, not just a system of record. And then finally, I think you really have to be omni-channel or at least multi-channel and not just this tool that just work on a singular channel. Because as I mentioned, the work of integrating these channels is part of what makes it so challenging for the marketer.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we got some time to catch up with one another and have part two of our conversation, right? Part one was, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur. What do you think, Dave? And I'm like, yeah, go for it. And we had that chat. And now, a few years later, 125 clients, and I love the transparency and candor you have about the importance of and challenges of building a company and building a team and having success. For any of you that have never heard of Triblio, and I'm sure that's a fair number of you, it's Triblio. I certainly took a bet on Andre and his team a couple times now in my career with Eloqua and helping Eloqua clients. Definitely worth checking out their platform, seeing if it's a good and right solution for you. They've certainly grown from personalization, and you're still in that early stage. So I'm sure even if it's not the right solution, you know, for folks, you'd love to hear that feedback so you can keep shaping. I look forward to catching up next week when we see each other. The other thing, Andre, is I really hope that as people listen to these programs, there's a takeaway, and you can, and that is, you know, we're all in this together. When you pick up the phone right after hearing this podcast or the next call you make and someone says, how are you? And you say, good. Maybe give a different answer. Maybe talk about something that you're struggling with or something that an idea that you have that you may want to bring to market or forward and have that conversation and get someone to give you some feedback on it and really practice much more radical candor. I look forward to the team from Radical Candor being on the podcast, but practice candor and take Andre's advice, positive candor. It doesn't mean sugarcoating it. Don't give them the crap sandwich, right? Where it's like, hey, you did a really good job with this project, but you really suck about this. And did I mention that you did a really good job with this project, right? Nobody likes the crap sandwich, as I like to call it. But candor helps. So I hope you had some good takeaways from this. Thank you again, Andre, for joining me. Any final thoughts?
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast. And thanks for all your advice that you've given me over the years and just your friendship. And, you know, I'll say this to any of your listeners. Look, I'm an entrepreneur on the journey. I also, you know, spend a lot of time with marketers. Reach out to me over LinkedIn. I'm happy to carry on the conversation one-on-one if they want to do that.
I appreciate the open invitation to them. Yeah. Yep. Andre Yee, A-N-D-R-E-Y-E-E. Thank you, man. I appreciate always catching up, and I hope all of you enjoyed the very transparent, open conversation that we had. We'll catch you on the next episode. Take care.
You've been listening to Demand Gen Radio, bringing you the top industry experts, thought leaders, authors, marketing technology firms, and senior marketing leaders from around the world. to teach you the methods and technologies for high-performance marketing.